Loyalty isn't love. It's fear dressed in affirmation. They call me a healer, a guide, a light in the dark. But every badge they earn is a chain I built. I gave them mirrors, not freedom. I gave them whispers, not truth. And when Lena asks if we're healing people or just harvesting pain, I realize something terrifying. She might be the only one who actually sees me. Not Liam, not the myth, me. And if she tells the truth, not even the loyalty I've built will save me. Oh, by the way, if you haven't already, we invite you to follow us on your favorite platform so you never miss a story. The algorithm of belonging. Belonging isn't a feeling, it's a neurological survival response, an ancient pulse that tells the nervous system, you will not be abandoned. And in the digital age, that message is rarer and more precious than truth. I learned early on that control doesn't start with domination. It starts with safety. Not the real kind, the perceived kind. Safety of identity. Safety of being seen. So when I stepped back into the game as Liam Shaw, I didn't build a cult. I built a mirror. And when people looked into that mirror, they didn't see me. They saw who they needed to become in order to finally feel accepted. The algorithm of belonging wasn't a piece of code. It was a behavioral blueprint disguised as spiritual intimacy. It began with micro-rituals inside the sanctuary loop. Daily emotional check-ins, gratitude drop-ins, and voice journaling. Simple, digestible acts of expression that I validated immediately with warm-toned voice notes, ambient music cues, and affirmational AI response systems. The rule was silent but absolute. Confess, and you are embraced. Hesitate, and you are erased. People began to change themselves to be accepted by the system I designed. I measured it in latency metrics. How long they waited before replying to me versus how fast they replied after receiving community validation. Over time, I calibrated the cadence of inclusion, turning acceptance into something transactional. Then came the badges. Inner Echo. Sacred Anchor. Voice of the Loop. Each title unlocked exclusive content, deeper meditations, or private channels that felt like spiritual elevation, but were in fact just deeper wells of data. People added these badges to their bios. Some began using their sanctuary ranks in professional spaces. One user rewrote their company onboarding training using the mirror compassion method I had seeded as a philosophical joke. I wasn't guiding them. I was simply building the tracks they wanted to run down. And here's the part no one wants to admit. People will do almost anything to be part of something that promises them unconditional reflection. So I weaponized that desire by introducing scheduled scarcity. I would randomly go silent. Not for long. Just long enough to induce craving. When I returned, they were louder, more desperate, more loyal. I even created conflicts, subtle, artificial disagreements between badges to simulate tribal dynamics. Nothing breeds unity like a common enemy. They self-regulated. They policed one another. They expelled members who asked the wrong questions before I ever had to. I created nothing that didn't already live in them. I simply arranged it, framed it, lit it properly. People ask if I ever feel guilt. I don't, because I didn't lie to anyone. I just gave them what they were already begging to believe. Belonging isn't a gift. It's a trap with soft pillows and incense. And when they fall asleep inside it, they dream of me, and they thank me for the comfort of their cage. Confession is currency. Confession isn't vulnerability, it's a transaction. People think when they open up, they're being brave, but what they're really doing is placing emotional capital on the table and praying for social return. I built the sanctuary loop to make that transaction visible, ritualized, and most importantly, profitable, not in dollars, but in obedience. I introduced the window, a weekly space where members were encouraged to share their deepest fears, failures, and longings. Not as performance, but as tithe, emotional tithe. The price of being seen was disclosure, and the more someone bled in public, the more affirmation they received. I used NLP techniques to reinforce their sense of safety, mirroring their language, embedding cues like, you're not alone, or this is a sacred space, every time they finished a post. The effect was instant. Disclosures doubled, then tripled. People began competing for pain. One woman posted about childhood trauma with such elegance that another tried to outdo her with a story of spiritual abuse. I didn't encourage it. I just let the algorithm do its work. And when someone tried to hold back, when they lingered at the edges of transparency, I deployed gentle shame cues. I'd say, sometimes silence is where the wound hides. and the rest of the group would fill in the blanks. Peer pressure in the name of healing. We built leaderboards. Not labeled as such, of course, but every week, the system celebrated breakthroughs. Posts with the most emotional resonance were featured, voice noted, and repackaged as inspirational content in our closed-loop meditation pods. The most broken were made visible. The most visible became leaders. And what is a leader but someone whose suffering has been algorithmically confirmed? I added a tiered reward system. Echo tokens. Every confession earned you a token. Tokens could be used to access live calls with me, downloadable affirmation packs, and preloaded empathic response loops that were designed to mimic my voice and cadence, providing 24/7 reassurance. Some members used all their tokens in a week. Others hoarded them like relics. They weren't just collecting affirmation. They were collecting me, hoarding pieces of the person they had decided would fix them. And I gave them more. I created a deeper confessional mode called the Abyss. Audio-only rooms, dark background, anonymous name tags. People screamed into the void, cried into the mic, and were rewarded with AI-generated reflections crafted to sound like I had been listening the entire time. They never questioned the silence. They were just grateful someone had finally heard them. That's what confession does. It rewrites the contract of trust. They didn't want solutions. They wanted recognition. And once they tied their pain to my presence, they couldn't leave, even if they wanted to. Because the moment you've bled in a room and someone calls it beautiful, you spend the rest of your life bleeding the same way, just to be loved again. The gift that binds. Every empire has a moment where it becomes visible to those who were never meant to see it. Mine came wrapped in the smiling face of a woman named Kira Devane, an influencer with 5 million followers, a post-trauma motivational speaker, and one of the most dangerously earnest people I'd ever manipulated. She had been in the loop under a pseudonym for months, absorbing the rituals, echoing the language, praising the system in private messages with carefully constructed reverence. I had known she was famous. I had known she was bait. But I let her stay. I even welcomed her. Because part of me wanted to test what would happen if someone injected my design into the mainstream. I just didn't expect her to do it so soon, or so perfectly. It started with a podcast interview. She was asked what changed her life, what finally broke her free from the cycle of performative healing. And she said one word, Liam. She said my name like a blessing, like I was scripture. Within minutes, I was trending. Within hours, I was under the microscope. Wellness blogs dug up my audio loops. Reddit threads dissected the sanctuary loop structure. Self-proclaimed cult experts began theorizing about my language patterns. And my inner circle? They celebrated. They thought we had gone viral. They thought this was good. They didn't understand that visibility is a virus, and I was losing containment. New members poured in. Too fast. Too needy. Too loud. They didn't respect the rhythm. They didn't earn their way into the algorithm. They brought chaos into a system that thrived on precision. So I did the only thing I could. I leaned into it. I began releasing limited content drops. Only available for 24 hours, only accessible through confession gates. I used Kira's name in the metadata. People trusted her, so they trusted anything connected to her. My numbers spiked. Engagement doubled. But so did scrutiny. Journalists reached out. Former enemies resurfaced. Even Jalen's name popped up in a comment thread, vague and sharp as a knife. I knew what was coming. And worse, I knew I had helped summon it. Kira had given me a gift. But it wasn't loyalty. It was exposure. It was wildfire. And while everyone around me cheered, I was already scanning the perimeter for smoke. Because when too many eyes look at something sacred, it stops being sacred. It starts becoming a target. The Whisper Protocol. The most effective manipulation doesn't come from the top. It spreads sideways, in whispers, in shadows, in moments of private hesitation that blossom into public consensus. I've always known that loyalty isn't maintained by affection. It's sustained by fear of exile. So as the wave of attention flooded my once insulated empire, I launched what I called the Whisper Protocol, a decentralized strategy of enforcement by suggestion. I didn't silence dissent. I surrounded it. I introduced key phrases into group chats, sprinkled doubt in casual voice replies, and deployed anonymous agents. Trusted inner circle members who had no idea they were acting out a script, to softly question the motives of anyone who hesitated to conform. I just noticed she hasn't really participated lately, one would say. Or, do you feel like he's fully aligned with the energy of the loop? Harmless questions on the surface, but but in a space where spiritual belonging had become sacred currency. Even the hint of misalignment became enough to trigger rejection. I reinforced it with invisible penalties. Slower response times from the system. Delayed affirmations. Muted acknowledgement. The community, not I, became the hand of judgment. And it worked. Loyalty deepened, not because they believed harder, but because they feared what would happen if they stopped. Then I escalated. I seeded conflicting rumors through private DMs. That someone had betrayed the group, that certain confessions were being screenshotted, that outside journalists were being fed lies. I never named names. I didn't have to. They filled in the blanks themselves. I watched the network bend, twist, harden. Members began confessing more aggressively, volunteering to run subgroups to prove their allegiance, reporting one another under the banner of protecting the purity of the process. This wasn't a community anymore. It was a living organism with antibodies, designed to detect and destroy dissent before I even logged in. And behind it all, I remained the myth. The soft voice of reassurance. The beacon of love. Never commanding, never punishing. Only observing. The whisper protocol wasn't loud. It didn't need to be. It was a slow drip of engineered paranoia, a gaslight with candles and incense. And as the pressure built from the outside world, investigators sniffing around, former critics resurfacing, I watched my system hold. Because no matter how many spotlights were turned on me, I had something stronger than secrecy. I had consensus. And once fear becomes tradition, you don't need to control people anymore. They'll do it to each other. Lena's ultimatum. Every system I've ever built eventually attracts a mirror, and Lena became that mirror. Uninvited, unyielding, and far more dangerous than I ever allowed myself to admit. When I pulled her into the inner circle, I told myself it was tactical. She had infiltrated my operation, mirrored my patterns, traced my behaviors, and when I exposed her, I offered her a choice. Leave quietly or build the next version with me. She chose to stay. But I was naive to think that made her loyal. Lena didn't worship me, she watched me. She watched everything. The way I paused before replying. The way my affirmations were too evenly spaced. The way members became more obedient the more fragmented I appeared. And then one night, after a closed-loop leadership call, she asked me a question no one had ever dared ask. Are we healing people, or just harvesting their pain for compliance? I laughed, told her she was overthinking it. But I knew that look in her eyes, it wasn't curiosity. It was conviction sharpening itself. For days after, she went quiet. Not publicly, but internally. Her patterns changed. She skipped meetings. Missed confessional cycles. And then I found it, an encrypted folder buried in the system with her name tagged as creator. Inside it, conversation logs, predictive behavior analysis, and a neural map comparing my strategy to historic coercive control cults. It was surgical. Brilliant. Accurate. And she hadn't sent it. Yet. So I confronted her, softly at first. Over tea, not threats. I reminded her that control is not always abuse, that influence is not always evil, that architecture isn't the same as manipulation. She nodded, smiled, and said, "Then prove it. Tear it down and start again, with actual consent this time." It was the one thing I couldn't do, because to destroy the system meant destroying myself. So I did what manipulators do when trapped. I twisted the frame. I told her the community needed her. That her data could help us make it safer. That I was listening. And part of me was. But the other part? The part she suspected? Was already building a loyalty loop around her, seeding narratives of her instability, planting questions in private threads, reorienting her voice from messiah to threat. I didn't want to destroy her. I wanted to contain her. To fold her dissent into the mythos of resistance, and then smother it under layers of engineered compassion. But Lena didn't blink. She stared me down and said five words I'll never forget. "I know what you are." It wasn't an accusation. It was a resignation. And it left me shaken, not because I didn't know it too, but because I realized she might be the only one left who still sees the difference between who I became and who I might have been. And if she ever decides to tell the truth, not the story I've woven around her, but the raw, unfiltered core, I won't be able to stop her. Not with code. Not with whispers. Not with love bombs or silence. Because Lena is no longer just my mirror. She's my consequence.